Daniel, let's begin with the Restore Act and explain exactly what that legislation spells out.
Well, the Restore Act is, I think, a pretty interesting piece of legislation. And what Congress decided was that rather than putting all of the money into the Oil Spill Trust Fund, which is normally what would happen with Clean Water Act fines, the 80% of it was going to go to states and local governments that were impacted by the Deepwater Horizon disaster. So they passed the Restore Act in 2012, and what we're waiting on now to find out what happens next is two things. First, a ruling from a federal judge in Louisiana who will decide just how much BP has to pay in fines. And second, we're waiting on final rulemaking from the Treasury about how some of this money can be spent.
Right. And you have a point of view about how you think those funds should be spent, not just in Florida, but in other states that were affected by this spill. In your estimation, what's the wisest way to spend this money?
Well, I think when you look not just at Florida, but across the Gulf Coast, there's lots of opportunities to do things that have both positive economic and positive environmental benefits. And that's because the economy and the environment of the coast go hand in hand. I mean, tourism supports over 250,000 jobs in Florida. A recent study from Georgetown University said that it was probably going to be the second fastest growing sector in the Florida economy between now and 2018. So it makes all the sense in the world to invest in things that will really allow businesses to thrive, will encourage the tourist economy, and will do positive things for Florida's environment and the environment of the Gulf Coast more generally.
And if you're just joining the program, 4 years after the devastating BP oil spill, a federal judge is soon set to rule on how much BP should pay in fines for the damage caused to the Florida coast. How do you think that money should be spent? We want your calls. Give us a call at 549-2937. Daniel, it can't be overstated how devastating that spill was. Of course, it was on the other side of the state, the Gulf Coast side. But it affected the entire state, and we have yet to recover. So is it fair to say this money can't come soon enough?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And it's important to bear in mind that this is one of a number of different streams of settlements and criminal and civil fines that are coming out of the oil spill. There was the criminal settlement money previously came out. There was the economic damage settlement money. There have been a number of others. But if the judge rules that this was gross negligence on the part of BP and hits them with the highest possible fine, the Restore Act could account for about half of all of the money that will end up flowing to the Gulf Coast region.
And how much money reasonably can BP expected to pay? What's a ballpark figure?
We could be looking at a total between BP and Transocean of about $18 billion in Clean Water Act fines. And under the Restore Act, 80% of that would go to the Gulf Coast states. So they'd be looking at a trust fund of a little over $14 billion if this maxes out. And then that money is divided into a number of different pots that are split across the states in different ways.
549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment here on First Coast Connect. So once Florida receives its millions, then there's no guarantee that the money will go to the people that need it most. How skeptical are you about not just our state government, but all of the states that have been affected by this to be smart stewards of these funds?
Well, I think it's always a difficult question. And when you look at the history of states receiving windfall money, it's a fairly checkered history. You look, for instance, at the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement from 1998, and you see that across the states, only a small minority of that money was actually used for what it was intended for. A lot of the money got diverted into general revenues or used on politically popular projects. And I think that would be a real shame here for a couple of reasons. First, because, you know, as you said, Florida is still hurting as a result of the oil spill, and this is an opportunity to do something that will have long-term positive ramifications for the state. The second is the law of unintended consequences. I think that if this money is diverted into things that don't have the intended effects here for the environment and for the economy, it's likely that you're, if what you're doing is displacing things that otherwise would have come out of general revenues, you're likely to create long-term obligations for taxpayers that they're going to have to figure out how to pay for in the future.
Not only will this money help in those areas, as you wrote in a recent editorial that ran in the Tampa Bay Times, the state's taxpayers will ultimately be on the hook for nearly $333 billion worth of risk backed by the state-run Citizens Property Insurance Company. You're saying that this money and the projects it's invested in could help us reduce the future impact of more flooding, more hurricanes, future natural disasters along the state's coastlines. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the permitted uses of Restore Act funds under the federal law. And it really goes with the spirit of the law. If what you're trying to do is increase the resiliency of communities along the Gulf Coast, then doing things that mitigate the potential negative impacts of future flooding and hurricanes is definitely part of that. And you can do and a lot of these things, such as barrier island restoration, have positive impacts in terms of preventing future flooding and mitigating the effects of hurricanes. They also have very positive environmental impacts, and they're good for the economy, too, not just in terms of the increased resiliency, but in terms of what they can do for fish and wildlife populations.
And let's talk about the fish and wildlife population. It's been 4 years since the spill. It's a distant memory for many, not for those businesses, though, on the coast that were most impacted. I think across the state, many seem to think that the coast has recovered. That's not really true, though, is it?
No, and that's something that people it's a misconception nationally on this. So I think it is important to continue to bring attention to the fact that seafood stocks are down, that both commercial and recreational fishing are still hurting, and that from oysters to shrimp to red snapper to all other kinds of fish, stocks aren't what they used to be. And so Restore Act is an opportunity not just to undo some of that damage immediately, but to invest in things like artificial reefs that will increase habitats and increase populations going forward. And that can have a real boon for both the recreational and the commercial fishing and aquaculture industries.
Now, you're with R Street. It's a free market think tank, but it seems a little counterintuitive that you're calling for significant public investment.
Well, I don't think so, and here's why. First of all, we're not talking about taxpayer money. The question here is not how much to spend. It's not whether we should raise taxes to pay for these new projects. This is money that's coming to the state of Florida and other states regardless.
Uh-huh.
So I think the question is, how do you get the most bang for the buck out of it? How do you make really smart infrastructure investment choices?
And how do you do
things that don't have permanent negative ramifications for Florida, for Florida businesses or taxpayers?
And let's go to your calls and comments right now. Under the 2012 Restore Act, BP is set to pay Florida millions in fines under the Clean Water Act after the devastating 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf. What are your thoughts about how that money should be spent here in Florida? 549-2937 to join the conversation on First Coast Connect. Stephanie in Ponte Vedra is on the line. Hi, Stephanie. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I definitely think that some money needs to be set aside, ideally to be given to scientific research for the future. As you stated before, this oil spill is still causing and will keep causing negative impacts on the ocean and wildlife. And I think that it would be awesome if some of the money were given to, further research down the road up into, years and years to come, to see how this is going to affect, our reefs and the fish and us at the end of the day. So,
Yeah, thank you for that. That's a great point. Stephanie in Ponte Vedra, Daniel Rothschild, what about that?
Stephanie, I think that's a fantastic idea. Unfortunately, it's actually something that's already in the Restore Act. As I mentioned earlier, the Restore Act funds are divided into five different pots. And the last two pots are a 2.5% of the money each. So it's a total of 5% of the Restore Act funds. 2.5% of that will go to the federal government, and 2.5% will be divided between the states for exactly the kind of scientific work that you're talking about, looking at how to rebuild stocks, looking at how to learning about how the ecology of the Gulf works. So I think that there's a great opportunity there for that kind of oceanographic study, and fortunately there will be money for it.
549-2937. Let's go to Mark on the south side. Hello, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to ask your guest. I agree with what he's saying that, we need to spend this money on, reconstructing our Gulf Coast, things like that. But why is he so anxious now to spend this money since he says it's coming from out of state? It's not his particular tax money. I just think it's, ironic that now he wants to spend money when it comes to pushing up our state. He doesn't want to spend our own tax money to do that.
Mark, thanks for the call. Daniel.
Well, obviously the people of Florida are free to spend their taxpayer money however they want. The question with the Restore Act is, you know, how do we get the most bang for the buck here, as I was saying earlier? And what we're trying to do as a think tank is to study and learn from what's happened in the past and suggest ways to make improvements going forward.
Let me ask you, Daniel, what would be a worst-case scenario, in your view, once this money comes to Florida? What do you see as the worst case in the way it's allocated?
I think probably the worst-case scenario is you put this into, and you basically treat it as general revenue. You use it to cut taxes in a way that's not sustainable, or you use it to increase government spending or government employment. Because this is, you know, one-time money. If you add a whole lot of folks to the public payroll, once the money runs out, you've got to figure out how to pay for them. And what that's going to mean in practice is either tax hikes or service cuts. Neither of those things are politically popular.
And the Restore Act, does it carry with it preconditions on how the money is spent, or is it just a gift?
Well, it does have preconditions, but it's pretty wide in the categories that they've put together. So on the Pot 1 money, which is evenly divided between the five states, I mean, Florida will be getting about 7% of the total Restore Act funds just from this source. You can spend it on anything that's connected to economic development, workforce development, environmental restoration, just about anything else.
Right.
So it's a pretty broad category.
Sure. And lots of calls now as we're discussing the 2012 Restore Act. BP is set to pay Florida millions in fines under the Clean Water Act after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill. How do you think the money should be spent? 549-2937. Let's go to Sean in Jacksonville. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. I think I'm sure they're coming out. The money's going to come with preconditions, but I think that our government officials should treat that money just like the average individual would treat it, where when you get a windfall of money, like a big bonus from your employer or something, you should pay off debt. So if there's a way possible for us to pay off all the state's debt, we should use it for that purpose.
Sean, thanks. Lots of ideas coming in, Daniel Rothschild.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I should probably make a little bit more clear, Florida's a bit of an outlier relative to the other Gulf states, because in Florida, it's the counties that have the authority for spending the money and not Tallahassee. Now, one of the things that a number of the counties have suggested is using this money instead of, effectively bond money in the future. So things like clean water projects that they otherwise probably would have had to have voted a municipal bond for. So I think that that's a fantastic idea, and I think that does exactly what the caller was just talking about, which is reduces future debt by not having to issue it to begin with.
You also argue that the process needs to be transparent. Florida has pretty strong sunshine laws, but still, does that concern you, the potential that this will all be done behind closed doors?
Well, here's the thing is, I think it's important to look at transparency as really a two-step process. And the first one, I think, is much more important and not generally as relevant to state law. And so the first part of this process is deciding what it is that you want to do with the money. So I think in order to do that, in order for that to be really meaningfully transparent, you've got to generate all of the ideas for what could be done with the money. You've got to figure out what the costs are, first of all, the upfront costs, and then what are the ongoing costs? What are the liabilities you're looking at over the life of the project? And then you've got to figure out what the benefits are. And that all has to be done in a really transparent way where there is a big public discussion about it. So then after you've decided what it is that you want to do with the money, you've got to decide who your contractors are going to be and who's going to execute. And that's phase two of transparency, figuring out who's bidding the contracts? Are these bids being done? And is the bidding process completely transparent and open? And then who's getting the checks and how much are they for?
And when might we expect a ruling on this from the federal court in New Orleans?
Well, that's kind of an open question right now. And I'm talking with people who are court watchers and who are watching the process unfold in the Gulf. The people seem to think it's likely to be this spring or maybe this summer. The judge in question has a reputation for trying to get people to settle rather than having to them issuing judgments. So people are speculating that he's pulling folks together behind the scenes and trying to come up with a settlement. And then obviously if that happens, that means that there won't be appellate litigation, which there might be in case of a ruling from the court. Mm. The other thing is that the Treasury Department has to issue final rules before they can start cutting checks to the states and counties. And that's likely to be this summer before we see that final rule come out.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show. Let's go to Mike on the West Side. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Not that I don't trust politicians, but, I mean, I don't. If we set money off to the side for some future down-the-road thing, it'll simply be rated, I believe, in whatever kind of slush fund or whatever they want to do that'll, it won't be what was originally designed for. I say we take the money, spend it on something that we can see tangibly, we can see in Jacksonville that, that makes us happy, Jacksonville people happy, whatever it is. And that way we know where it went, and there's none of this down-the-road accountability stuff. You know there's going to be a problem if we let the politicians handle this for too long. Thank you.
Not to say there's any cynicism out there about this process. Thank you, Mike. So Daniel, here in Duval County, we weren't directly impacted by the oil spill, but since these funds will be distributed by county, Duval, St. John's, Nassau, Baker, Clay, all of the counties in our little corner of the state will get some of this money, yes?
Well, actually, it's just going to the counties that are on the Gulf side.
Only the Gulf counties, okay.
Only the Gulf counties, and they're divided between from Escambia all the way down to the Keys, and it's divided between disproportionately affected counties, which are the 8 northwestern counties on the north side of the Gulf of Mexico, and they'll get 75% of this, what's called the Pot 1 money, and then the other, I believe, 23 counties going down the coast, or the other 15 counties going down the coast, will get the other 25% of the money.
Well,
It's important to note that, of course, that this is just pot one of the money. There are two other pots. The second pot is going to be coordinated between the governors of the 5 states through the Gulf Coast Ecosystem Restoration Council. And then the third pot of money will again go back to the states, or in the case of Florida counties, to do additional projects that support the plan that's put out by the council in pot two.
And let me ask
it's very confusing, I know.
Sure. And let me ask you, too, as the gubernatorial race in Florida heats up, it's one of the most high-profile in the country. It could be the most expensive political race in state history. Should Charlie Crist become the Democratic nominee for governor against incumbent Rick Scott, do you see this being a campaign issue in that race?
You know, it's hard to say, but I think that the larger question that comes out of it, how do we make effective decisions about spending public money, whether it's taxpayer money or money from a fine, in the long-term interest of businesses and taxpayers and the environment, and not just Floridians today, but Floridians in the future. I think that should be a theme of any campaign. And likewise in Texas, which also has a fairly high-profile gubernatorial election coming up this year.
Well, fascinating to speak with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Daniel Rothschild is a senior fellow and director of state projects at the R Street Institute.